Welcome to The Pen and the Yod. Join Rabbi Michael Siegel from Anshe Emet Synagogue and author Jonathan Eig as they talk about this week's Torah portion of Tazria, the resonance of our words.
How seriously do you take what you read? In other words, there was a time when you would open the newspaper and kind of just accept what was being presented to you at face value. But in today's world, that's not so easy. So I'm just wondering, do you take a grain of salt to everything you read?
Yeah, I do. I think I always have, and I think now I have to be more leery than ever. But, you know, the first thing they teach you freshman year of journalism school is if your mother says she loves you, check it out. And the training there is simply to check it out. You know, and I'm in the business of writing books that are often based on other books that have come before me. And when I read them, I'm always grateful for the scholars who've come before and have done this work. But I also know that they make mistakes. They're easily duped. Sometimes they lie. And I have to be really careful to check out as much as I can. And even then, sometimes I fall into traps and end up repeating false information. It's a serious occupational hazard.
Right. Well, in your latest book, Dr. King, you sort of expose a canard about him that was once published in Playboy. I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that was a big deal. It's a really big deal. For 50, 60 years now, we've been repeating this quote that when Martin Luther King was asked what he thought about Malcolm X, the quote is, "I think Malcolm X's fiery demagogic oratory brings nothing but grief to the black people." And King never said that. I discovered that the quote was entirely fabricated by Alex Haley at Playboy magazine. And you think about how many kids have learned that quote in school. I talked to black history professors who said they've been teaching that for generations. It's a published article. Now it's in history books. And then your professor is reading it to you from the front of the classroom. What could seem more legitimate than that? And yet, when you go back to the source, you find that the quote was fabricated by a journalist or by his editor or both. And man, that's hard. It's hard to know how you're supposed to trust anything when you find stuff like that.
So one quotation can just change the trajectory of people's thinking. It has a kind of a ripple effect in some very significant ways.
Yeah, I mean, it's changing history because think how many people grew up under that influence, thinking that Martin Luther King was highly critical of Malcolm X and might have shaped their own careers as activists, might have shaped their own careers as scholars, shaped how they viewed, you know, their responsibility to speak out in the world, and they were operating on a lie. So, I mean, we all have to be vigilant.
That's really true, but, you know, it speaks to, you know, just how pernicious that is because in some ways, Malcolm X was always painted with a very negative brush. He's the black leader that we don't like. And Dr. King is the leader that we do like. And so in some ways, that quotation only underscores that.
Absolutely. And it also shows how the white media was interested in dividing and conquering the civil rights movement. So what we ought to be focusing on, in a way, is our own complicity in dividing protesters and trying to maintain the system of white supremacy that Malcolm X and Martin Luther King were both working to overthrow.
I wonder if you are thinking, well, why did I even bring this up?
No, I trust you that you're taking this in a Talmudic direction.
The Torah is hearkening to us.
Prove me right.
Yes. So this week we are beginning the portion of Tazria and Metzora, and we are really looking at this ancient disease of Tzara'at. And what the rabbis do with this is something really interesting. Tzara'at was some sort of skin ailment that was very contagious, but there's indications that it had a spiritual aspect to it as well. But what the rabbis did with it is they divided it as an acronym for three different words. Mitzora was, the M is Motzi, and then Shem Ra, Mitzora, which is to be a talebearer, to be a gossip. So what they thought was that ill-used word or a misdirected word was a form of a societal leprosy. And in a way, that's contagious. You know, you hear something and your thinking has forever changed about that. So you know, this Alex Haley piece that had a resonance for so many different people, shaped how they understood Dr. King and shaped how Malcolm X was seen. And it was based on a lie. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a very powerful issue. Certainly in the Torah, the interest of the rabbis is really based in the Torah, acknowledging what separates human beings from the animal kingdom is their ability to speak, that we can use language, that we can talk. And so Yehuda Low of Prague, you know, once pointed out that the word for language in Hebrew is lashon. And the letter Lamed is the first letter. And if you look at a Lamed, it's written in such a way that the top of it points upward. But the last letter is a Nun Sofit, a final Nun, and it points downward. And the thing about language is that can raise us up and it can lower us down. And your notion that everything that we hear, we should take at face value, but we should verify it, including your mother's love, which is a chilling but understandable approach. But how do you, as a journalist in the world in which we live, not simply through social media, but also now with AI, we used to say seeing's believing,
right?
But now I'm not sure that that's true either.
No, it's really tricky. We've already seen evidence of people putting forth videos of people, you know, in compromising positions that have turned out to be fake. I think there was a Taylor Swift video and we've certainly seen lots of political videos where people are faking situations to try to sway voters. And it seems like, you know, the gloves have come off, like anything goes right now. You can put forth the most absurd thing and you don't care anymore because it's, you know, it'll influence a certain number of voters. Right. And that, it's worth the risk. And yes, there's a danger that you might be sued for slander or libel. But the chances of that seem so low that people are willing to put anything out there. And I think that it's created a whole new set of challenges for people trying to figure out the truth. It's almost like we don't care about the truth anymore, that we're living in this age where there's very little risk involved, that you might as well just put it out there, slander your opponents. And if the argument is that, well, it's a more important truth. So I may be making up this quote, or I may be showing videos that show somebody in the most unflattering position possible, but it's worth it because I'm fighting for the larger truth and that my truth is truer than your truth. And that's what I think the state of politics has become today in particular. And that makes it very hard for someone to discern whether it's me writing a history book or whether it's a voter trying to figure out whether this candidate really is as dangerous or as dumb as they sound. So the question I think is, you know, what can we learn to help guide us through these anarchic times where truth seems to have lost its tether?
I think that one of the things that we might want to consider here isn't simply the motivation of the person who creates the lie that gets spread, who's the talebearer, but why do we listen to it?
Mm-hmm.
That's also part of it. One of the interesting things the rabbis say is that when someone is slandered, when there is gossip in the air, three people are murdered at once. The person who spoke, who shared it, the person who was the object of the gossip, but the third person is the person who listened, mm-hmm. who actually listened to it. And I want to suggest to you that part of the problem is that there's something pleasurable about listening to gossip. Oh, you have secret information, or that you know something about a person, that there's some sort of pleasurable aspect to that. And so we listen to it, we kind of lean forward, as opposed to saying, what are you talking about? I'm not listening to this, right? There's a pleasure principle there. I think TikTok is the proof of that, right? That people get addicted to just scrolling up, scrolling up, scrolling up. And the terrifying part is how many people get their news from TikTok, right? That they don't read other things, they get that news. And that's whatever someone feels like saying, you know, they're going to say it, and they can have all kinds of background pieces and supposed links to other trusted sources. Again, if you don't verify it, you won't know, but it's that 20 seconds that you listen to something that stays with you. Just like all those people that heard that Dr. King had spoken against Malcolm X, that became the gospel. They took that in. And I think it's going to be very hard for us to navigate this.
Part of the reason that we see this growing universe of misinformation is that people have an enormous appetite for it. It's like, you know, a drug. It must fire off some dopamine hit in your head to see something embarrassing or to hear something embarrassing about another person. So is that human nature? Is gossip something that we crave in the same way we crave sweets because it satisfies some fundamental thing in our brains? And then the question is, you know, how can we resist that? How can we discourage the spread of gossip? I mean, if we created an environment where people didn't want to hear it, maybe the people would be less likely to spread it.
I'm going to suggest that we would have to move from me to we here. We would have to be able to see the danger to the larger society. In other words, I have to get beyond myself here. Mm-hmm. So let's just take the most basic example of gossip. Someone says to you, I got to tell you something, Jonathan. Did you know about Rabbi Siegel? I got to tell you this story. You won't believe it. But I'm telling you, this is unbelievably juicy gossip, right? Mm-hmm. So in that moment, you have a choice to make, right? I'm going to listen. I'm not going to listen. But you think to yourself, I didn't share it. I just listened, right?
Yeah.
But in that moment, what happened to me in that process, right? You know, how do we then say to that person, how do we get from the point of what's the damage? I'm just going to listen. To, I'm not listening to this. This is not good. In other words, how does it impact the other person? Once we get beyond ourselves and that pleasure principle, if you want to use that term, how do we start to think about what's my obligation to the larger society, right? What's my obligation beyond my own ecosystem, people I mm-hmm. work with, my job, my family, my friends? What's my obligation to the larger society?
No, it's a great question because you become complicit when you just listen, the passive act of listening. You know, everybody who listened to the FBI surveillance of Martin Luther King, all of the reporters and the congressmen and the presidents, they're all complicit. They're not stopping it. And if they had refused to listen and maybe taken a step further and informed others that this surveillance was going on, maybe they could have done something positive. You're right. It's a great temptation to always listen, but listening is not a passive act. It's it can be complicit in this case.
That's the step that we need to be able to take. You know, I was just in Israel, and in the last election, the Netanyahu people put out a terrible lie about Benny Gantz, that he was a serial philanderer, and he was not able to really stem that in any meaningful way. But I'm sure that's not the only reason that the election went the way that it went. But the people in Israel, you know, his political, Netanyahu's political people, the goal was winning. It didn't matter, right? We'll fix it later. I'll apologize after the fact once I get what I want. And that, I think, is, I don't know if it's COVID related. I don't know if it's kind of social media related. But we kind of live more and more in our own little bubbles. And that, I think, is a perfect, that's really fertile ground for the worst possibilities with language, communication. And now with AI, it becomes that much more dangerous. I mean, when major tech organizations are warning about the dangers of AI, and many are asking for governmental enforcement, that's telling you something. And I don't think we're at all prepared for what's coming. And it really does scare me. And so the portion this week really does speak, at least in the rabbinic interpretation, of a kind of a national leprosy. I guess we should end with this idea. What happened when a person was suspected of having this illness? They would be quarantined. They would be cut off from the larger society. Now, the Torah goes into detail as to how that person should be treated and treated humanely, and the priest goes to see them, all the rest. But the idea that a society needs to protect itself by quarantining itself from negative forces, I think has a message for us today.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more that quarantining, well, you hear about people taking vacations from social media, you know, and that's, I think that's one really healthy way of quarantining yourself. And you also hear about people being, you know, kicked off of social media for pernicious lying. Although I think that's happening less these days. Seems to be a wide open field for liars. But I do think it's useful to think about it that way, that isolation can be enforced. Isolation can be helpful sometimes to step back from this world of chaotic lies, and whether it's healthy to be a part of these ecosystems.
Yeah. And it all really boils down to how seriously do we want to take language, right? Are we going to use the Lamed of Lashon to kind of enlarge ourselves, to raise ourselves up through language, or will we be the Nun and lower ourselves down? I guess it all boils down to that. But I do want you to know, Jonathan, that it's always a pleasure to talk with you. And I know you'll have to verify the sources on that, but it does come from my heart.
Oh, thank you. I'm not even going to check that out.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rabbi.